Hey, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, January 10th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. But if you really like this show, if you're really into this thing, you would give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You let everybody know why you like it, because it leads me closer and closer to world domination and possibly a date with Gugu and Botha Raw. And once we have a date, it's over, bro. Kids, 2-car garage, solid mortgage, you know, or maybe not even that. Maybe she just would know who I am. Maybe she just know that I exist in the world. You know, maybe, you know, oh, this Chris Lamberth made a lot of money on his podcast and he's in TV and film and he does stand up. And she could see a clip of mine and say, oh, he's funny. And then she just go on eating a biscuit because she's from the UK. This is episode 478. I have a super special return guest, comedian Ramon Rivas. You've seen him on Comedy Central. You've seen him on HBO. Terrific comic. He's got 2 albums out called one. The first one's called Revisited, and the second one is called Stick to Comedy, both released in 2020. We talk about that. But before that conversation with Ramon, I'm going to talk to you for a few minutes. I'm going to be upfront with you guys because... and girls and men, women, and all of you, they, everybody. I'm going to be upfront with everybody that's listening to this right now. This isn't Sunday. It's Saturday. I just got done having a great conversation with another person who's been on the show before and is back, will be back in at a future date. And I just decided let me just take that energy that I had from that conversation and do this intro early. You know, I just had like a nice little, I didn't have lunch, but I steamed some broccoli in my steamer basket from Crate and Barrel. It was good. It was actually really good. You know, after you finish steaming it and then you just leave it in there for a couple minutes more, maybe 5 minutes more, it gets soft. Like the broccoli is nice, chewable. It doesn't taste raw. And so it was really good. I seasoned it pretty good. So that was good. I'll probably eat some chicken wings and watch football, maybe, or watch a movie. There's movies that I want to see that I'm kind of like that, just whatever. So I got that out of the way. This has been a weird week. It hasn't been that weird. It's just the country is, most people, no, the country's fucked up. We're fucked up with COVID and we're fucked up with white supremacy and racism. People voting against their own interests to keep white supremacy alive. And people will say that, you know, oh my God, what we saw is the death throes of white supremacy and racism. But we keep seeing the death throes, the last breath of these white supremacists. And some of them were not that old. They're middle aged or they're younger. And one of my homies sent me a clip of a black kid, a black Trumper that's 20 years old from PG County. And he sounded dumb as shit. And it's like, you were a fucking disgrace to PG County, kid. I what the fuck? Is trying to be different. Trying to be different is one thing, but it's like, you don't have to go that far. It's what a shit show. And I would just, it's hack to even say that if that was black people, we know the outcome would be different. Like the Firestarter crew says, it's the biggest it won ever. The homie Rod said it on his show a couple of days ago. You know, it's terrible. It makes me angry. It makes me sad. It's kind of funny too. I'm surprised, you know, because somebody even said, where were the rubber bullets? You know, you had the Jacob Blake obvious announcement from the DA on Wednesday. They had fucking soldiers around in Kenosha because they thought black people was going to do something. And you just have people showing their true colors on social media. And it's people that you wouldn't expect. Like, some people you expect to make that heel turn. You're like, I saw that coming like 5 years ago. I saw that coming down the pike. It's one comic who's been on the show before. I'll let you do the math on that. I'll let you make you. I don't like calling people out on here. I'm not trying to say like I'm a fucking saint or anything. Some of the shit that comics talk about, I believe is best to do it off mic, unless there's like a personal attack or whatever, then I might consider talking about that shit. But it's been a lot of people. It's been not a lot of people on the show, but it's been this person was on the show and people were like calling her out and getting their shit in on Twitter, whatever. You know, it's whatever. Some of them joints is funny. But I just don't want to do that here unless, you know, somebody really trying to get at me. And I don't think anybody, this isn't the type of podcast to do that. But that off mic shit, we'll get it in. We'll allude to that shit and we'll dance around it on here. And but it's been people that have been that you thought would be allies, like it like without question, they would be allies. And you just be like, God damn, you just can't let. You, what are you holding on to? You're holding on to this white supremacy. Actually, it's funny. It's like two white women that have both been on this podcast were going back and forth. One was like, I don't feel anything for this white woman that got killed. She shouldn't have been there. And then another white woman who's been on the show was like, in her comments, and they were going back and forth like, you know, I'm such and such, but I still feel this woman got, you know, da, 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 da. Secret Service don't care what you are. If you're a man or a woman or they or you're non-binary, if you're threatening the lawmakers of this country, you're going to get clapped. And that's basically what happened. Like the Capitol Police, the head of the Capitol Police supposedly resigned or said he was going to resign. But it's different when you're really getting in. They were damn near in the bowels. I would say low key, they were in the fucking Capitol building doing that shit. It's ridiculous, man. I'm ashamed of this country, man, that we let this happen. And it's just, you hear this stuff ad nauseum. And you just, I don't feel like, and what you will hear on subsequent episodes of this show, you will hear conversations about what happened. This is a weekly show. They aren't evergreen, but I still put these shows, I put this show and especially these conversations that I have with people, I put it up there against anybody. I don't give a fuck who has the more listeners than me, more Patreon subscribers. This is a good ass podcast. Pause for effect. And yeah, we have some good conversations on here that I've been told by people who dig this show, they come back to every now and then. So that's a good feeling. But on a lighter note, when Randolph and Andy were on, we had a segment where I was acting like getting earbuds was the fucking Sophie's choice of everything. And I did get, I finally ordered some earphones, earbuds. I got them from eBay and there's these, the Sony, what are these? I'm going to just tell you, cause we did spend several minutes on last week talking about this. And then we're going to get to Ramon. This just to give you the Sony WF-1000XM3 true wireless Bluetooth noise canceling in-ear headphones. I love these. These are really good. And I did watch Flossie Carter's review, and he gushed over these, and he really loved them. And they're normally, like, they're selling them at Best Buy for like $229. And I was like, I low key was a, like, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, I was going to get something. And thankfully I was at Target and nobody was around to help. And I almost pulled the trigger. And then I went on eBay. I was like, yo, I saw some for like $107 and with the same brand, and got these for like $120 with, you know, with the tax. And I don't even think I paid for shipping. And they're great. I've only had them for like half a day, and I've just been listening to music a little bit and talk to my parents on the phone, and they're great. And I just kind of feel like Ariel in The Little Mermaid when she gets her legs. It's so cool. Like, I have not, when I was working out at the gym and stuff, I had the Sony wire, like they were wireless. They weren't the true wireless, but they were like earbuds with headphones with like a band on, like a wire strap thing, and it would hang on the back of your head. But these are true wireless. I dig these, and I feel like I can walk around and I can cook, and I'm not confined by the wire. So it's cool. I like it. I'm happy with that. Not that much else happening that this week other than the failed coup attempt and me getting earbuds. I did buy the new Miles Morales Spider-Man. I have not played it yet, but I did download that. So I'm excited to check that out, and I have not beat Control yet. I should not have bought a new game when I haven't beaten Control. Doesn't seem like, I keep missing the PlayStation 5 drops. So eventually one day I'll get one. But then I keep falling into this where they say, oh, we're going to, you know, these new games. I heard that it's possible that God of War, the new God of War that's supposed to come out later on this year, it's going to be on PS4. You can buy it on PS4. I have a PS4 Pro. It's going to look sexy on there, yeah, but not as sexy as the 5. But if they keep doing this, if they keep like not releasing, if they keep making this console to where you can't really get it unless you just stay glued to your fucking phone and not living your life, then fuck it. I can wait longer. Yeah. So that is, I think that's it for me. I've blabbed enough, but we got some good content coming in the next few weeks. Subscribe to Patreon. There's good shit over there. You'll hear, by the time you hear this, there will be a Patreon episode uploaded. And I'm not going to, it's actually a really fun one. So that's going to be there. And let's get you to Ramon. Ramon and I had this conversation last month. It was before New Year's, and we were just kind of catching up. We were shooting the shit. It's always great to talk to somebody like Ramon. He's like he's a go-getter. And I appreciate this man's hustle, his grind, as the kids say, whatever the kids say. But Ramon is that he embodies a person that doesn't just talk about this shit. He does it. And we just had a great conversation. And this is me, Chris Lamberth, your host, catching up with the very talented, the very cool Ramon Rivas.
I'm mostly okay.
Yeah.
I think that's like a fair response to that question. It's my usual response. Even going back to like when I lived in LA, and it would always throw people.
Yeah.
Cause you're used to this just generic, like, oh, I'm all right, or I'm good, or, you know,
yeah,
you don't want to talk about it.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, on podcasts, we talk about it. I mean, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. What's Cleveland been like during all this?
So I'm in Ohio, but I'm actually in my hometown of Lorain, which is about a half hour west of Cleveland.
Okay. A steel town.
Yes, exactly. It used to have a big steel plant, used to have like a huge Ford plant, and shipyards, and those all have died since I've been alive. Uh-huh. So like the immediate area where I live is kind of like the same. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in the beginning of the pandemic, people were like, what if the economy doesn't come back and these places close and never open? I'm like, well, then we'll just get donuts at a different place. Like, that's what, like, I could point to so many places that, like, just stopped existing in my lifetime. Like, we have a whole dead mall down the street. Mm-hmm. So, like, that level of things didn't really scare me, or I felt very prepared for it because of where I grew up.
Sure.
And then, like, Ohio in general, like, it's a very purple state politically. Mm-hmm. So as many people who are, you know, wearing their mask and being respectful of each other, there's just as many people who don't wear masks and who think that the their entitlement to liberty precludes my safety and their safety.
Sure.
But, you know, I stay mostly at the crib. Like, when it was warmer out, I was producing shows at the park down the street from me.
Yeah.
And that just came about because I finally filed for the pandemic assistance and got like a chunk of the money. So I was like, oh, all right. So I bought like a PA system, speaker stand, mic stand.
Yeah.
And then a little power adapter. So I power it from my car that I also bought on Facebook Marketplace.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I just found all this shit that people just didn't want no more. I was like, I'll take it. And really just was able to just do that show at the park on Sundays. And it was just kind of one of those, like, I need some, like, you know, I kind of carved out a niche on the margins of comedy.
Sure.
Like, I've been fortunate to, like, have a couple specials and be on a couple things. But, like, that hasn't really translated to, like, clubs fucking with me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, still struggled for consideration even before the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
So the pandemic's made it much worse.
Yeah. It's still weird, though. Like, I always appreciate your grind, like the way that you went after this, because it's like you didn't have a manager or agent. You got on you got your half hour. You were constantly doing your own work with the oh, my God. My favorite festival I've ever been to. Accidental Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
And I was there in 2015. I love the shirt that I got, by the way, but I also wish that I think one of the last ones you had was really dope. That black, the black one.
I always try to like that. And that's another one of those things. Like, there was already a comedy festival that existed in Cleveland, but I kind of just didn't think they were hitting the nail on the head as far as like this. Their festival isn't what comedy in Cleveland feels like, or, you know. And so I started doing kind of my own thing. And at Hermit Crab through the years, I did it for 8 years. And the last few was like a good group of comics. But it got increasingly difficult to, as I moved to, you know, I was living in L.A. and trying to leave space for the other people to step up. They kept deferring. Mm-hmm. And so it created this weird tension expectation for each other. And so I just stopped. I was like, hey, I'll dissolve this so everyone can just go back to like being buddies.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Cause it is a different, like, not everyone's wired to buy all the shit to do a free show in the park.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so even with that, I was like, well, I don't want to just have a model. I want the show to be free for people, but I don't want it to be free labor.
Right, because
that's one of the main things with comics is like we do so much work that we don't get paid for that you get kind of used to it. So I'm like, all right, it ain't much, but I'm gonna give everyone that comes and does this park show $10 to come through. It's not much, it's gas money though. And so a couple people a week will come out, but like over the course of the several months, like I paid over $300 out to just like spot pay to comics around town.
Yeah.
And then that led to a Friday night series behind this art council building. And I would pay like 75 to close, 25 for the other spots. And I was just using my unemployment money as my budget.
Wow.
And then I would just take donations. Yeah. So a lot of times I would like break even or like lose a little money, but I'm also like, I own, like I didn't have to pay this business to do shit. I didn't have to, like, this is all, like, this was a parking lot before this happened, and now it will go back to being a parking lot.
And I guess it's, like, kind of going back, like, the universe will kind of pay you back in its own way, in a positive way, hopefully, when you do it that way, because it just seems like some people, like, in here in New York, I haven't done a show since February, and it was, like, a road gig in Jersey, and I miss it, but, like, I just feel like nobody's like checking for me to really do something. Like, I will do something.
Exactly, same, same.
Yeah. And it's like, even so, it's just kind of like, I can wait. Like, and it's just kind of like this weird, I don't know, like how I feel about it a little bit. It's like, now that it's, you know, they had that article, I think Seth Simons put out, I don't know if you saw that. I think it might have been on Paste or Vulture or something, where like Brian Regan caught COVID and he didn't know where he got it from. And he had been doing a bunch of like inside shows, and they're talking about
all I went and saw him at Hilarities in like late summer, early fall.
Okay. Yeah.
It was interesting.
Inside, like, or outside?
It was inside.
Okay.
So a little discomforted with that, but they were taking people's temperatures, and they put up, like, they'd taken seating out and kind of spaced everything and, like, put up these little plastic partitions, but it just felt like, I don't know if y'all know how air works. But they also, they spent a bunch of money and installed a new HVAC. So, like, they did all the things as a business. They did as much as they could do to give y'all a safe space.
Right.
But just being inside isn't safe. It is like, in the research that says, like, talking or yelling or singing is a super spreader. So it's like the intimacy with which comedy thrives in is endangering to the artist and the audience, which is why I was doing shit outside. Cause it's like, I could at least enact this space. So I went and, you know, they had the comics have to wear their mask from off stage to, they could take it off when they get on, but like, you're walking past people. So like shit like that, where it's like, okay, y'all are trying, but I still wound up like, they, since I'm a comic, they sat me up in like one of the empty seats, and they sat another comic next to me who I know had COVID in March. This is like months later, you know what I'm saying? So it's past the transmission period, but it's also like, I know. So it was like, so I like kept my mask on most of the time. And I still like, I got a piece of cheesecake, and I bought myself food and got a to-go food for my girl.
Yeah.
And I still spent, like, with a tip, I spent, like, $60, even though it was free tickets. So it's like, I can't even afford to engage in this right now. Mm-hmm. But I understand that there's a lot of people in this purple-ass state that don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had the opportunity to move my outdoor shows indoors, but I was like, no. Because I don't, you know, it got too cold to ask me to come, for me to ask people to come be uncomfortable outside, and I'm not comfortable doing shit inside.
Yeah.
So, boom. Now, there's been a couple people who've done indoor shows in the city, and the all the clubs in Ohio are open.
I've seen them on Instagram. It's like,
But it's one of those, like you said earlier, ain't no one checking for me.
Yeah.
So, that's what kind of led to that buying of the equipment, because I'm like, okay, if these places that barely gave me consideration before either close or continue to not give me consideration. And these spaces that I'd kind of carved out, like, okay, I can go do like a couple bar gigs in Boston and then like a door deal at the comedy studio and make like a grand and then go to New York. Like, you know what I'm saying? The math on those places are closing too.
Right.
And so, or they're open and it's indoors. So it's like, I don't know if I feel safe doing this. Yeah. So now I own the means of production to do a show. And it's one of those things I advise comics, if like, for what I got would get paid to do a feature weekend, for less than that, I now own the means to do an outdoor show or go indoors anywhere and kind of charge places like a DJ does. Like, I'm bringing equipment, I'm 2-3 hours of boom. And, you know, to look at it as like the business mechanics of it, which a lot of comics don't. Both sides.
Yeah. What do you think? How does that make you feel? Are you just more, I guess, I want to say, the words that come to mind is like innovative and then ingenuity. And like, are you just like, is you just finding more ways to do stuff like once things kind of die down, or just like you're kind of doing what you're always been doing is just adapting?
I feel like adapting and surviving is just baked into the DNA.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I've seen my parents always kind of have a hustle to them. Like even around the holidays, they make coquito, which is like eggnog with Latino flair. Mm-hmm. And that's how we get Christmas money. Like that's how my dad's gotten money for Christmas presents for as long as I can remember.
Right.
So there's always this little like, oh, I can do something to make a little something.
Yeah.
But it's been mostly like, I don't know if innovation or the words you use, I tend to call it diversifying the skill set.
Okay.
Cause sure. It's like, and then also like if these places that validate me continue to not consider me, how do I still have value to myself?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what trying to figure out these other metrics are. And I was fortunate to where like I had someone gifted me a copy of Final Draft, which is a script writing program. Yes.
I bought that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's a hefty investment for someone like, you know, you're not making any money from anything. And it's a $250 program for your computer. But there's also little cheap workarounds. Like I found the app for the iPad or the iPhone is $10 and it's fully compatible with the desktop version, which is full industry standard.
Okay.
So it's like there's little, you know, you might not be able to get the $250, but you can get that shit on your phone.
Yeah.
You know? You can do different. So like trying to write more shit. And then I was supposed to record an album like when the pandemic shut everything down, like in, I think it was April or May, I was supposed to record at a club. And like the deal was like a couple warm up weekends at their other spots to get ready for taping and then the taping.
Yeah.
And then a split on the proceeds once they recoup costs. So I was like, all right, well, let's do that. And then everything just shut down. So canceled it. So I looked into it and just like I talked to a rapper buddy of mine, Chris Crack, out of Chicago. And I was like, what do you use to distribute your music digitally? Because he does a lot of mixtapes or like independent releases. Uh-huh. And he told me about this website called DistroKid, which is it's like $20 a year. And you can upload as many projects for one artist as you want.
Oh, okay. Right.
Where something like TuneCore is like $20 for one project. And like, you know, like there's different variables to ever all of them. But I was like, okay, DistroKid seems cool. So I had a bunch of clips on video clips on my laptop and I just chopped them up in iMovie and exported them as an audio only file. Uh-huh. And then I uploaded those as DistroKid and put out the first album.
And that was Revisited, right?
That's Revisited. So it's just, I call it pre-mustache comedy. Okay. It's like stuff I did on my half hour and kind of older material that like I don't really do anymore when I'm on stage.
Yeah.
But it works. But I don't, you know, as a, your comic, like you know what works, but you want to talk about what you want to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's always a battle. So I did that and then just started kind of like I didn't get any reviews or any like news around it. I just dropped it and kept it moving.
It was good. It was good. I listened to it as soon as it came out. Like I always check for, you know, whenever you do something, because I just appreciate your grind. Everybody's grind is different, you know, but like, because I'm trying to remember when you were on last, but it was pre half hour that you did.
Yeah, I think it was the half hour was in 2016.
So it might've been at least.
So I think it was right. Yeah. It was around then. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we were in New York in the city and you had got locked out or something.
Oh shit, yeah. I got locked out of the apartment for a grip and then the upstairs neighbor had to like let me in and they're like, what do you mean? Cause it was like, you know, comics are very like hermit crabby. So it was like someone who lived there.
Yeah.
That, like, had only lived there for a little bit and was like subleasing from some of the, so the person upstairs like, what do you mean? I'm like, dude, I ain't got no shoes on.
Yeah.
The door's open. There's a little dog there.
Yeah. It was a good episode. So it was before that. And, you know, like it's like I always will say, like you made your own way. And it just seems like it's still kind of like I'm not even you. And it just kind of frustrates me where it's just like, you know, like you make these achievements. You would think sometimes in your own hometown that they would, hey, you know, do a weekend here or at whatever club.
I try to not take those sorts of, like, I get like frustrated with it, but I try not to get bitter about it.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Cause like at the same time, I'm like, man, a lot of people who I've either brought through the festival or like co-signed and like got them spot have worked at the club before I've worked at the club, which I love it. Like, it's great to see, but it is like you say, you notice those things, but it's just one of those.
Yeah.
Y'all ain't the only thing that's going to make me.
Right.
And it gives you perspective on like the places that feel equity in you versus the ones that don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, I've submitted that album to Sirius in like May.
Okay.
And it took me a little bit to like find the submission, because that's like one of the big reasons people go with a label is like, well, they submit it to Sirius for you.
Yeah.
And I just on their Facebook was like, hey, where do you send? And they sent me the shit, and it was like a long like metadata Excel spreadsheet. You had to like meticulously put all the info in. But they approved, like three stations accepted six tracks. So less than half the album got accepted. Over half of it got rejected, which like comedy, you're just used to rejection.
Yeah.
And I got my first payout and I'm like, oh shit. It's like two headline weekends.
Wow. I need
from
to do that.
From some shit I chopped up from my laptop. And like, I would like, I struggle to accept or to try to get a club to value me that much.
Yeah.
And literally like a 48-second clip made me a couple $100s.
Yeah.
It's real wild.
Yeah.
That like, and that, again, it was one of those things that like, I think all comics should do, like own the equity of production and then own, like, it was so much money because I own the masters and the artist.
Yeah.
Residual side, where there's a lot of comics who eat well off just the artist residuals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would have to now be at this point and see what I would have given up had I done that album with that label is interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
Go ahead.
There's certain things you get with the label. You get like the ego boost of like, I got this label believing in me.
Yeah.
And you get like whatever work they're able to do around it, whether they can get it reviewed or they can get it on year end list or they can get it, you know, on X, Y, and Z. But like, you know, to know that you're able to do that shit yourself is so valuable.
Yeah, we're gonna have to talk about that too, because I did mine myself, but I did through CD Baby and my buddy JL.
That gives you all the same info you need, but I'll email it to you.
Okay, I think you did though. I have to look for it. I was just fucking lazy, but I did.
It's what I've told everyone. I did it. I told everybody. I was like, it takes a while, but you should do it. And again, this is shit. I chopped up the album in March when the pandemic happened. It got released on 420. I got accepted on Sirius like the end of July, beginning of August, and then the payout I got in December was tabulated into November for mostly September spits. So everything's like 2 to 3 months behind.
Yeah.
But now I may get at least a portion of this every month.
Mm-hmm. When it comes on time. Whenever it comes, it's on time. Dude, that's
exactly.
That's like acting residuals. It's like, oh shit, I could have, you know, I look at that app. I remember one time my car broke down and I had to dump all this money into it. I had to use a card. And then I think I was listening to Tiger Belly, and I think it was like Bobby Lee and Andrew Santino just talking about like, oh yeah, residuals, you got to check, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I checked my residual on the app and I was like, oh shit, I had all this money that I didn't know. And like, I had these checks in my mailbox.
Yeah.
I was like,
man.
Oh shit. So yeah, like
it's, and so Sound Exchange does that for comedians or music acts, audio wise. So the only thing that give us royalty really is Sirius. If Sirius goes away, comedians' economy is collapsing.
Yeah,
but it gives you such an odd amount of, like, I've been spinning my album in the background on Spotify and Apple Music, and I probably generate maybe $30 a month for each of them. So maybe like $50-$60 total.
Yeah.
And so however much since a couple $100, you know what I'm saying? Me spinning in the background.
Damn, I need to do that.
But again, it's one of those, like, it ain't much, but shit, that's all your Christmas presents, or like that's your insurance for half the year.
Yeah.
Or that's a new phone, or that's a camera if you're trying to upgrade. Like, you know what I'm saying? It gives you a little bit of equity to work with off some shit. Like, I don't ever want to do those jokes again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I did a chopped up another album in August of political shit and put it out, and it's called Stick to Comedy. And again, it's shit that I wrote and polished, but I don't do know, it don't fit anywhere.
Right, right.
Again, if any of those cats, like, I got a track on there that's like 30 seconds. I'm like, man, if I can get that 30 second clip on shit, that'd be dope.
Yeah.
Because it's just real quick, like, maybe they'll play it a lot. Because, like, you're trying to grind out a programming hour.
Mm-hmm.
Slap that bitch on there.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. That's really good. Yeah, I did the CD Baby. I did Sound Exchange. I just did that over the weekend, the Sound Exchange. And I'm going to submit to Sirius. It's so I need to get on it. Cause I just kind of did the same thing that you did, and it did debut at number one. I just did like a bunch of podcasts and did it that way. And then I broke down on my couch crying. One of my buddies hit me like at 3 a.m. They're like, you went number one. I was like, fuck. I was like,
yeah. No, it's like trying to figure out the algorithm to even do that. But
yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy.
Beautiful.
And then you look at these end of the year lists and it's like, hey, well, you know, I put something out, but partly people know people, and the people are talented. It's nothing mm-hmm. against those people. Cause it's like, it's stuff that hasn't even been out yet. That's not out yet. And it's like, shit. Okay. Well, they're connected in that way. It is what it is.
That's what's beautiful about what I did is it's such an anonymous blop.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like people like you who look for what I'm doing ingested it, but you ain't ingested 3 times, 4 times. You know what I'm saying? It was once. It's like, all right, that's cool. That's how comedy is consumed.
Yeah.
It's not something that you put on and work out to.
Yeah.
You know,
I was a nerd though when I was a kid. It's just different times. Like I would get that. I had Paul Mooney's like Masterpiece and Race. I would run that all the time. But I was a fucking nerd. Like it would be Pryor, Martin Lawrence, but the Eddie Murphy, like I would run that. But you know, there's probably kids listening to our shit. Like fucking Ramon Revis, like that motherfucker. Like, you know, you guys don't understand, man. You never know.
Yeah. And that's what's super interesting, because I can see all the different, I can see Spotify, I can see everything separate.
Yeah.
And Pandora is where I have the most listens.
Okay.
Because I got added to some random playlist that like people would listen and like, oh, check it out. And the other ones is more me and a small, like the people like you who I know who listen to it on these apps. But that's all complete strangers who I have no. So it's interesting seeing like the half life of something where it's like, oh, these are people who just listen to comedy. They have a comedy Pandora station.
Yeah.
And they just listen to it and they fuck with who they come across.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to even have your CD Baby shit in a space where you can get it over there is fucking a wonderful place to be, because a lot of comics don't even have that part ready.
They just give it to my homie JL Covan talks about it all.
Oh, okay.
So, you got me? We good?
Yeah.
Cool. I was going to say, like, you know, love your stand up and enjoy your stand up and all that. But one of my favorite things that you did was your failed pilot with Megan Gailey. Is it Highbrow, Lowbrow?
Yeah.
I rewatched it. What the fuck, Comedy Central? I mean, it was so fun.
That was one of those cool things where I was just grateful to like get, I got to like work with one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And like that was interesting, because it wasn't my idea. It was an idea that Comedy Central had already. A director gave them a take on it, and then they were looking at people to cast.
Okay.
So then I randomly, like, they had, the director called me. He's like, oh, you're in Ohio. How's that? I was like, oh, I'm in L.A. And he told me where he was. I'm like, oh, I'm like 20-minute bike ride from you if you just want to meet at this coffee spot.
Okay.
And so me and the director wound up chopping up for like a couple hours, and I mentioned like a couple, like Megan, a couple other people. And then he wound up falling in love with Megan too. So we got to go do this thing. And it was interesting to like shoot it. And then the director edited it down. And then the feedback was, can you change the format to be more like a travel show? Mm-hmm. And so they did that. So that's what the what you watched is that version of it. And then they passed on it and they were like, we love Megan, we love Ramon, we love the director, but we just don't like the format. And it's like, oh, but you told us change the format. So it's one of those, like, I don't, it's the dog chasing the tail, but it wasn't my idea. It wasn't precious to me.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I got paid to smoke weed on the Rocky Steps. That's an all time game changer.
Yeah, and you had the late great Chris Cotton in it when you guys.
And that was cool because I just like they said we were doing it in Philly, and I was like, initially we were like, okay, if we had our druthers and we're going to Philly, who are we talking to if we could talk to anybody? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I want to talk to like artists and business people who succeeded out of it and see like how the city informed their journey. So I was like, I'd love to talk to like the Roots.
Yeah.
And Megan was like, I want to talk to Allen Iverson.
Uh-huh.
And then the reality of like production schedule, production budget, you know, yeah. But we had like, there was people who like, they checked with the Roots. They checked with Allen Iverson. They figured out what everything cost. And then we had one member of the Roots who was able to do it, and we were going to film it on the Amtrak because he would Amtrak from Philly to the city for the Tonight Show taping and take the train back. And so I was like, oh, that'd be cool to just catch him on the train, but that didn't work out.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Chris, I hit Chris up. I was like, hey, we're doing this thing. I was like, can I send your name to them? And that started a relationship where Comedy Central fucked with Chris Cotton from that point. Like, they had him post some like red carpet type shit and some like man on the street type shit. So it was cool to like, that didn't go anywhere, but it impacted
someone,
other motherfuckers, you know, which is beautiful.
Yeah. I didn't know him too well, but he was always a nice dude. I just do remember one instance where we were at the Knitting Factory at Hannibal's show. And one time I got off stage and he said, you know, you remind me of me if I had my shit together. I was like, all right. I was like, I guess I'll take that.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to ask, since you're a man of about every time I have somebody on that would probably know that travels a lot, are you a Wawa guy or a Sheetz guy?
So Wawa's not in Ohio.
Yeah.
All like that.
But
so
you've had both.
I've had both.
Yeah.
I have more Sheetz around me.
Yeah.
So I can go to Sheetz. I can't. So when I'm around a Wawa, I'll fuck with the Wawa.
Yeah.
Everything is so bad for you, but
oh my God, with it.
And same with Sheetz, where it's like, I used to eat earlier in the year, I was eating Sheetz a lot.
Oh, because
it's just so I was eating some pepperoni rolls and like Cleveland's a place where I'm broke, but I could afford to eat my feelings. So I'd find those type of places and just I'm spending less than $10, but I'm eating a menagerie of food.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, I don't need to be eating this much.
Yeah. No, I was pleasantly surprised in during my trip there. It was like five years ago now doing your festival. I was like, oh shit, they got Sheetz. I was like, oh fuck, I'm eventually gonna go there. The last time I was in Pittsburgh 2 years ago filming a TV show, and they had, obviously on my way out, I had to stop at Sheetz. Yeah, I had it in undergrad. Like, I went to school in I guess you'd call it close to, it was Emmitsburg, Maryland, like 15 minutes south of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So we had a Sheetz close by. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think, what else shall we chat about?
How have you been pivoting and adapting during pandemic and quarantine?
I have a day job and I've kept that. And, my listeners know, but like, I'll tell you, maybe I'll edit it out. But I was working on Broadway before I made my Broadway debut. We were in previews and I was in a show directed by Sam Mendes.
Man, that's
beautiful. Yeah.
Making these moves motherfuckers don't even think about.
Yeah. So it was just like, so that was like an achievement that I was like, that I didn't think would happen. You know, it was just like, if shit happens to your friends like that. And I thought it was just going to be, it's not like, oh, I'm famous. It's just like thinking more pragmatic, like, oh, I'm on Broadway. I'm in the union. Now I can audition for some of these union plays around the country. Yeah, and really like,
and just, the pool of talent.
Yeah.
Gets smaller and smaller. So you're just staying in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be that. And then just thinking about like putting the hour out, like working on the stand up and all that. And just the stuff that I had planned. And I think doing this, having more conversations like this, doing the podcast, has just kind of kept my sanity, which is something like, you know, like in the past 11 years of doing this, it's sort of like, you know, everything's kind of compartmentalized, whereas I have my day job. I do that because I have to do it. And then after work, I can do whatever. Like I can do a set. I can go into the city, do a set, work out material. And then I feel like, okay, I'm balanced because I got to do something artistic. And so this is like the podcast, I've just kind of been trying to put more into it. I got a nice new mic and,
I see that,
you know, a little Rode Pod mic. It's not, you know, it's funny. Cause like you, everybody has the, I don't know if you're a tech guy, but the SMB, you've seen it. Like Rogan has them all of that. Yeah. But I was, my buddy Andy Klein was telling me, just get the Rode Pod mic. It's good. Whatever. Anyway, throwing myself into the pod, talking to people like you, has been good for my sanity and just really kind of locking in with that. But, and that's really it. I did buy an exercise bike.
I bought a rowing machine.
Oh, really? How's that? How you like that?
It's good, man. I got it for myself in October.
Uh-huh.
I had given a comedian I saw a live performance of theirs and just gave them some input on the production and they sent me like $500 and I was like, hell yeah, new Xbox.
Yeah.
and then I was like, wait, let's just spend a little more and get this rowing machine. Cause like,
yeah,
I've seen a few like Jordan Temple, Janelle James, like a couple like very successful people I know, like fuck with them. And then I'm like the president of the House of Cards would write it. It seems like a rich person thing. Like I feel like I should be plotting while I'm rowing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I've slowly built up, like in the beginning of October, I could like, I do 10 minutes and be like, woo, all right.
Yeah.
And now I got an Apple Watch for Christmas. And I'll do like burn 400 active calories. And then the next set I'll burn 300, the next set I'll burn 200. And the 400 calorie is like an hour and 7 minutes of rowing.
Okay.
And I couldn't do that in the very beginning. And now it was just kind of like the first row of the day I do that many. And then I taper off towards the end of the day. But it's given me like an anchor to the aimlessness.
Yeah.
You found like the exercise bike does the same thing where it's just like you just kind of like, oh, I did something.
Yeah. Yeah. It made me feel like less of a loser. It's just like I would watch The Sopranos. I was like binging on that. And it was just like for an audition for an accent. To get a taste of it. And I was like, oh, I forgot how amazing this show is. So I'm just going to keep watching it. I just finished it over the weekend. But like, yeah, like I, cause like you, like I was like, oh, I want to get a PS5. And I was like, ah, I should just get a bike or whatever. I'll get a PS5 eventually.
Eventually. Yeah.
And I'm not really like as much as it was hard for me to admit it that like, I love video games, but I'm still casual. Like everybody knows, like my listeners know that I love The Last of Us, that series, and it was amazing. And when the part two came out, I just spent 4 days not doing anything but that. Like I took a couple days off work
And damn, that's dedication.
And binged, yeah, because it was amazing.
PTO.
Yes, yeah. Had to do the PTO, so that was fun. And then I did, you know, that was like the really exciting thing that I did that game. But I was like, you know what? I'll get a PS5 later when shit's not too crazy. And then like you see people posting all their shit. Oh, I got a PS5, but it's like you've never talked about video games ever.
Yeah. Do you feel like you could write a video game? Like how, because like most of the games I play is like, I play NBA 2K and like,
yeah,
right. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like not shit with like, or even the games I do play with story, like Red Dead, I just play online. So it's okay. Very loose story. But yeah. Like, do you feel like you could weave that narrative experience?
That's what I'm working on with my writing. I'm thinking about like, not necessarily I'm making a game, but it's going to be like, whatever it is going to be like a loose version of me. It's like a project, you know, write for yourself. You know how everybody.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like something along the lines of that. Yeah, it's like I've been like playing with stuff to try to figure something out. But it has definitely inspired me. Like the Last of Us franchise and God of War, the most recent one. Mm. I've just been kind of like doing a lot of research to and just trying to figure some shit out. That I need That's to just cool. kind of, I need to like, I think for me, like artistically, my stand up is pretty autobiographical. It's not like observational. I'll do those every now and then, but like, mm-hmm. you kind of want to crack open the chest cavity a little more, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I want to work on. So,
well, because there's so many layers, like watching you on stage, like I get your autobiographical, your low energy, but I would never think or map onto you fucking Broadway acting. Like that's a whole layer and muscle texture of yours that doesn't even get used in this thing.
Yeah, I'm in debt for the MFA in theater. I don't know if we ever talked about that, but yeah, like it's something that. God, I don't know if I ever, I think stand up was always the thing that I wanted to do because I didn't start until I was 29. It was like, so it's just kind of like get into 30. I need to do something that I always wanted to do. I'm in a new city and it's like, I didn't like what I was around in the city. So I just like kind of wanted to figure some shit out and it's opened me back up and it actually stand up actually got me to Broadway. A weird thing.
Also, you know,
you can always do like it just that's a good question. I would say that it made cause in Chicago, I wish that I would have started in Chicago, but I was working. I was in school for 3 years. I was working outside of school while I was, you know, training. And really being a part of that culture of the Chicago theater scene. And that was around the time.
Which is
like,
strong.
Yes. It's like the best in the world.
It's as strong as like the comedy scene. Like it feels like grad school. I always describe their comedy scene as like comedy grad school feel.
Yeah.
And I imagine the theater is maybe even doctorate level.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of like. That's probably around the time that like Hannibal was starting, Kumail, people like that, like early 2000s.
Early 2000s, yeah.
Yeah, and I was just like, I did a little bit of improv. I auditioned for Second City once, but you know, I was really like getting into that. And one guy was saying like, Chris, you ought to try stand up. I was like, no, I was afraid. It was a lot of fear. Like, like I told you, like when I was 13. Listening to Paul Mooney, Martin Lawrence, he's from my hometown area in PG County, just like obsessed with these guys, all these people, Chris Rock, and then Dave, you know, and just kind of put it on the back burner. And then I guess
you see that you're like, I can't be that good.
Yeah, right. I was like, I'll never be that good. And so it was just kind of like, what do I really want to do? Taking a class at UCB, paying $400, trying to find myself. And I was like, I don't know that I want, I got an MFA. I dumped a lot of money into that and I don't want to do this like hierarchy of
mm-hmm.
fucking UCB. As it works for some people, but just wasn't for me. And I was like, I should just do stand up. I remember at the graduation show, I was doing this like, you know, like, I don't know when you do, you know, about the Herald and stuff. It's all, oh, give us a suggestion, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I had this thing about, I walked out and did the story. Like, I told a story about the high school reunion, and then we did scenes and stuff. And I was like, oh, maybe I should do stand up. And I started and never looked back. And then that got me a manager, like maybe like five or 6 years in. And then I started going to auditions again. And then it was just like, it was just a nice pairing for that. Like, yeah, you know, like I had Damian Lemon on a couple weeks ago, and we were just talking about like I was chasing ghosts. I was chasing like Montreal, what I thought mm-hmm. was, because all my friends did it. Like Lemon did it. All these other guys did it. The people above me did it. And it was just like, okay, well, that's what I have to do. And then some of those things didn't, like, within a matter of a couple years, a lot of that stuff kind of changed. Would it be nice to do? Of course it would. And, you know, but it was just like, it's a little different now. So it's just kind of like, I need to just like stay in my lane, do what I do, appreciate the people that are out there killing it in the way that they're killing it. And just then stuff started coming a little bit. Like when I auditioned for Montreal, like I had done a few SAG gigs already. And I was like, well, okay. I gave it my best at Stand Up New York. And, you know, and it just dealt with the results. But I guess in a long way, I guess that's part of my journey. You know, mm-hmm. I remember my dad telling me, you know, you do those glorified bringers at Caroline's, the breakout artist thing, which is, to me, it's still dope. And my dad told me, he's like, oh, you're performing on Broadway. I was like, I guess I am. And then,
yeah,
you know, that was like 2014. But yeah, man. Oh, did that answer it?
No, yeah. I mean, it's you go through the doors that open for you, but it's like, no, wait, because it's kind of, Dulce Sloan's kind of very similar. Like, she went to school for theater shit. So it's like, she was just in the movie Chick Fight that dropped recently. And like, I texted her while I was watching it. I'm like, yo, you're like moving the movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, she's a character who like establishes what's about to happen and then mm-hmm. pivot, like, if you take her out, the movie falls apart.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's crazy. But to know that stand-up was kind of similar to you, just kind of this thing you fell into that felt right, but it ultimately wasn't the thing you were prepping for.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
interesting because it's just like how you kind of fall back into things. And it's just like, I always say like a big city, any type of city kind of informs. Like, I don't know, I'm trying to, it's almost like it's spiritual, but I used to say this early on in the show, like New York is kind of like, it kind of molds you in a way where it's like, you might come in thinking I'm this, and then the city will say, maybe you're kind of this, and it'll give you,
if you can listen.
Yeah. If you listen to it. And so I knew that with doing stand up, I felt like, okay, this is a part of me too. And this is bringing me like this joy. Like, it's bringing me happiness, because I always say, if I look back, like before I moved here in 2007, and within those 2 years, I started like stand up in 2009. And I was like, I was probably depressed. I'm sure that I was.
Oh yeah.
And
because most of us can't even you don't even think of that in terms of that growing up.
Yeah.
Because you could learn to compartmentalize early, but it's like, looking back, I can see that like my parents both worked very hard to be exactly where they are. And we never were like super poor, but like we're working class. Like if I wanted something, I'd get it. But I'd be aware of how stressed out they were to get the money to get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you just wind up wanting less.
Right.
And as a result, needing less. So mm-hmm. you're suppressing this, like, I don't know if it's a presumption to a standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? This like feeling of like, okay, I deserve everything I want and I'm going to get it. And it's not going to make my mom sad. Or it's not going to make my dad pissed off. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you walk around and like, to then be an adult who has that when you walk into a comedy club and you're able to just fucking talk to the booker and just open their calendar up for you. And then me and you will walk in, same type of set, and just not be able to have that same like, well, yeah, now open that calendar up. Let's go.
Yeah.
Because we feel
liberated. And you think that's and do you think that's a being a person of color, being black and brown? Is that part of the duty you feel, or
I think so, because if I'm presumptuous in that way, I feel like it's aggressive.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if that's projected onto me or an expectation that I'm worried about fulfilling.
Right, right.
But it, you know, it's hard to break that. And, and you know, cause once you start to, like, I've had it with, like, you know, I was supposed to, open for like a bigger comic who was touring and it was just going to be me and them. It was going to be a 2-person show and they were paying me more than normal. And then they had to reschedule. Mm-hmm. Now, when I initially booked it, I emailed the club like, hey, I'm coming to open for them. I see the dates around it aren't booked. I got a half hour, I got HBO special. I'm on Netflix. Like,
yeah. Cool.
You know, if I can headline those wraparound dates, which is pretty common for acts to do. Again, I'm doing it as me, an individual. Normally, like a comedy agency will do that type of shit. You won't even think twice.
Right.
So I email, I don't hear back. I email a couple more times, I don't hear back. Then the comic has to cancel and reschedule. So now I'm emailing like, hey, I hadn't heard about those wraparound dates. Also, they canceled. So if you need to fill in, and I emailed as soon as they texted me, I emailed.
Yeah.
Now, this is just me being a professional. I'm giving you the most advanced notice to try to get the dates around it. I'm giving you, as soon as I know they're not coming, I can fill in. Boop, boop, boop. The email I got back was I get a lot of emails, you know, I have a lot going on in personal life, like blah, 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 blah. And it took all my energy to not respond. Like, this is your job. Like your job is to respond to this email. Like, I'm sorry that I'm trying to be like, I emailed you months ago. She's like, the dates around it are full. And I'm like, now they are 2 months later.
Yeah. Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like running into that type of shit. I feel like if I didn't have that poverty mindset or that like survival mode, I would come across completely differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I don't know how to frame my very reasonable professional things when you're hitting me with this energy, like I'm bothering you.
Yeah. It's, I feel that way in a lot of regards too. I know, like, I remember the time. This part of the conversation is making me think about when I realized what a bringer was. I think it was two real pivotal moments, I would say. I started at Ochi's Lounge in the now closed Comics on 14th and 9th and Meatpacking. Sean Donnelly used to run the mic. And I remember doing something at New York Comedy Club soon after that. And I had people like coworkers. I didn't know any better. I shouldn't have had nobody should have seen me do what I did. It went, and even though it went over okay, like I got laughs, but you know, looking back, you're like, what the fuck? Nobody that I knew should have seen that shit.
You got laughs with no moxie.
Yeah. And
or
like
just moxie.
Yeah. And so I think the booker even gave me a little bit of money. He was like, come back next time. And then I came back. I think I might have had a couple people that came to see me. He put me on. And then nobody came. And he's like, we'll put you on later. We'll put you on. Never got on. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, hey, man, I waited. And, you know, it was like 12 o'clock at night. I had to get home. This is when I didn't really know that I should have just been driving into the fucking city. I did have a car, but I should have been driving. Whatever. And I was like, okay, I'll figure something out. Then I had a gig. It was a bringer at fucking Comic Strip. It was at the Comic Strip. And then I had almost enough people. Then some friends came and then he put me on. And then I tried to come back. I was like, oh, this isn't, I can't keep asking people. I can't keep depending on people to come to these things. I'll get a flip camera and I'll record myself. I just recorded my shit at open mics. I just prepped it. You would throw stuff that shouldn't be on YouTube anymore. You know what I mean? But I worked around it and people saw like, oh, like guys like Mike Lawrence was like, hey, you're funny. You're in here all the time. Come do this show. Come do this mic. I remember, like, I don't know.
And your world expands.
Yes. And it's comics that give you those world expanding experiences and opportunities. And I just was just really diligent about it. And I think to a certain degree, like I, until about maybe 2012, when Levity Live opened, which I will call my home club, even though it's like, it's fucking corporate, but thanks to Steve Mazzilli, who runs Gotham, he was getting that club on its feet. And Chris Hardwick got me into that club. I remember I had opened for Hardwick in 2011 and I just emailed him. I said, hey, you know, you're performing in my backyard, basically. Would love to open for you. He was like, sure, we'll take care of it. Open for him. The next day I'm driving home. I was going to see Bill Burr at like in Inglewood, like not far from me. Driving home, get a text email from Steve. And he's like, hey, somebody dropped out. Can you open for Colin Kane? I was like, all right. And then that relationship happened. And it would be times
you
where
live right here. Cool. We'll just,
yeah,
this is mutually beneficial.
Yeah. And it was like getting work. And sometimes you look at your phone with your bank account and you're like, oh shit. And you get that text. Hey, Chris, can you open for this guy? Can you do a weekend? I was like, yes, of course I can. And it's just like,
I'll get paid. I'll get to eat free. I might make some little merch money.
Yep. And it was just like, I was like, okay. And to me, it still felt, I don't know, maybe you can speak on this. It still kind of felt like I was outside of the industry, outside of the scene, because I'm working at this club and it taught me so much. Like,
you're talking about in West Nyack?
Yeah, in West Nyack. Like, because it was like, I had this conversation maybe a couple weeks ago, just saying like how it was like auditing a class. You see like this A-level headliner, even if I wasn't working, I would go into the club, sit in the back and watch. Yeah.
That's something I tell young comics and around the city all the time. I'm like, as soon as the club looks at you as a comedian, meaning you've gone and done like one of their showcases and like, just go and watch shows.
Yeah.
Like, just go and study. Like, and then they'll be like, oh, I don't want. And then it's like, okay, you just don't want to do comedy.
Oh, really? They don't listen?
Or they'll be like, they'll weasel around it. Or it's like, you know, you can't want something for somebody. It's like, yeah, just go down and like, you can't be talking about like cunts and fucking this type of shit, but like, you figure out how to do what you want to do, but in that context.
Yeah.
I don't want to. So then you don't want to go do a punk rock show at a punk bar.
Yeah.
Like there's, you know, if you want to, if you're building your ego around, I want to work at the comedy club, then you have to do the study to work at the comedy club.
Yeah. It's crazy because like I got my first gig at Caroline's doing like taking the bullet at the top of like D.L. Hughley shows at Caroline's.
While they're still sitting people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were there. No, they were there. They were in. They were ready for the show. But like I just went on. I went on basically before his opener. So I kind of hosted. But I remember like
just to get the announcements and like a quick like bah, bah,
bah, bah, bah. like 5 or 7. Yeah. And he took me to this, like, I can always say this fucking shit, but he took me out. Like we went out to dinner, but I met him at Levity Live. I met him at Levity Live. Cause I was like, oh shit, D.L. Hughley's in my backyard. I'm going to go into the city, go tonight, go to the mall and go see him. And I just wanted to like like shake his hand, like big fan, grew up watching you. And he was like, come backstage. I was like, oh shit. Come to find out, like I went to theater school with one of his road manager's daughter. And he called her up on the spot to like, and I was like, yeah, I fucking know. And that built like I don't know if D.L. Hughley would remember me now, but his manager fucking got me on at Caroline's.
Yeah.
It was all, but like, it's like those things. If I was at home playing PlayStation, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Or if you were in the city doing like a negative, call it negative stage time, open mic. where you're just,
I never
like,
heard that,
you know,
before. I like that.
But I call it like their show, because there's a certain point where any stage time is valuable to you, and then there mm-hmm. becomes a point where what you are working on cannot be done in that type of environment.
Right, right.
So like, you know, it's a negative. Like, you're spending time and energy to go do something that's not going to benefit you. That's negative right. stage time. Where like, you might not get up at the comedy club, but you'll, oh, DL, oh, your manager, oh, cool, I went to school, oh, cool, boom, boom, now you got yeah. a gig. Now, yeah. next time they're there, they reach out and open, you know, that's how a lot of my shit was. I'd either open for people at the clubs, or I'd run my own shows and bring headliners yeah. the clubs weren't working through. So I would go to New York or LA and be able to do shows at these places.
Right.
You know, without having to live there and, like, drudge through the...
Yeah. I feel that way too. It's like part of me feels like I think I'm a respected comedian, like at my level and everything. I think like people like, you know, respect me and stuff. But I felt like in New York, I felt like I had the best of both worlds. One, like getting to work at Levity Live and getting to work with all those headliners. And then like being from the Maryland, D.C. area, going to the Arlington Draft House and working there, where I was also open. I met Chris Hardwick there. I met Wyatt there. Wyatt gave me my first real, like, quote unquote, real weekend at Caroline's and like featuring for him. So that was like learning how to do like, and I'm sure you're more familiar with this, because sometimes like people will always say New York, it's the place, and it's an amazing place to do comedy. But every show ain't amazing. And DC, the Draft House used to have the Arlington Draft House was big, you know, theater space where they have like movies and they do stand up there on weekends. They used to have a side room called the Green Room where it would be packed, maybe 50, 60 people. And you get up there. They called it an open mic. But in New York City, that would be one of the best shows in the city.
That's like one of the best. Yeah.
And so I would go there when I would visit my parents. And get up and get real work in and really get work. And you could be featuring or hosting in the main room. In between shows, you could fucking go in the green room and work on shit. It was like an emporium. Like, it was like, and so I did that for years too, as I was like working on getting better for, you know, being in the city. So it was just like, but then it's almost like you kind of like have, no, I would say Levity's my home club, but I kind of felt like I was missing a little bit in the city in a lot of ways.
Well, I mean, you miss out on the hopping on the train and running into people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You miss out on the, oh, we're all going to go to the diner afterwards because you're going to catch the train back to Jersey, or you're driving, or you're, you know.
Yeah.
There's different experiences. But like when I would go to these different cities for the, like I'd go to New York and I'd sublet a room for like a month or 2 months. And just be there, because a lot of times when you just go visit a place, it's dope the whole time.
Yeah,
you get on all the shows. You're like, I'm about to live in this bitch. I'm gonna crush it. And you move, you live there, and it's not that. And so being there for those long time spans lets you know, like, what would I do on a Wednesday if I didn't have shit to do?
Mm-hmm.
How much does it cost to get an MTA pass for the week? How long does it take me to get from here to the cellar to hang out, to Caroline's to do a set, to New York Comic Club to do a set, to the Knitting Factory to hang?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And you're like, oh, that's not a real time frame. Or you're like, oh, when I leave at 11 a.m., I have to leave for the day.
Yeah.
I have to have a book bag. Like, you learn all those little different things mm-hmm. that give you a sense of like what living there would be like. But I've never driven in New York. I've never had a car and had that type of access and expense too, because you got to pay for parking everywhere.
It's a different part of the drive. Like Adrian Appalucci is on this week as we're recording, and I always credit her putting years back on my life, where she said, Chris, we were hanging out. She's like, Chris, stop being a pussy. Drive into the city. You're going to like save so much time instead of like,
because your time becomes more valuable than your money.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, and especially like at night, you're coming in at night, there's going to be parking that's free. You might have to look around a little bit, but yeah, like that changed. That was like 2012. And then I just like, you know, 5-6 years in, you're kind of getting more. And then I say like pre-COVID, a lot of the gigs that I was doing, it would be like road gigs outside of the city. It would be in Jersey playing like these halls. And that's an interesting monster too, because you kind of learn, you know, you just, it's a different beast to conquer. I just remember, like, I want to say it was early last year. If it wasn't this year, no, it had to be early last year. I did a week at the Borgata, which is the sweetest gig ever. You do 20 minutes every night. And Bill Burr was playing there the next weekend. He was doing the big event space. And I was able to get a ticket. You got the hookup. So after work, drove down to Atlantic City, watched Bill Burr, and was inspired. And then the next night I had a gig in this place like New Egypt, New Jersey, like this what do they call it? It's like a hall, one of those clubhouse places.
Elks lodges,
yeah,
like Sonic basically, Temple type of shit.
Yeah, kind of exactly. And the crowd was rowdy, and I just fucking lit into I fucking had the set of my life. It was just like so much fun because I was just like, yeah, I'm doing it. So it was just like, I miss it.
You felt valid. You were able to move in a way like, oh, I'm getting to work for this same place that brings this great motherfucker to town.
Yeah.
They treat me well enough to like, yo, we got you. Here's a ticket.
We got
like,
you. We exactly. Got you.
And then to be able to go from that to go like, that's how I felt like the beginning of 2019. The reason I was able to collect unemployment during the pandemic is because I was in New York. Just randomly on the humble, like, again, what am I just, I'm going for a chunk.
Yeah.
And I shot something for Vice and it was shitty money. And it was one of those, like, I don't want to do this. but it was like, I make a couple hundred on a random day that I wasn't going to do shit. So, all right, that's fine.
Yeah.
And then they were getting ready to do that Vice live show. So they were like, do you want to come in on Thursday and just kind of work with us for the day? I'm like, all right. So I like worked out, like I looked up whatever like SAG rate was, and I just came in under that. So like SAG rate is like $2,500 a week plus insurance and all this shit. So I said that, I was like, so I'll take like $400 a day. And they're like, okay. So I was like, shit.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So I worked on that for like a month.
Wow.
And then the people that I recommended they add replaced me. And then it got canceled like real quick. But it was one of those weird things where I'm like, I had no experience doing it. And I was like, are we not going to like dissect the show we did last night about what worked and what didn't? Okay, cool. Like, it was just a weird, like.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And it gave me a dough and experience and a couple connections. But while I was there doing that, I had gotten past at the Cellar. And so there was a day where like, I woke up late, and so I just, like, Ubered to work, and then, like, I went to work, and then on lunch I got a steak sandwich from Peter Luger's, and then
how
I,
was
like,
it?
That shit was banging, or it was, I got the burger, which is, like, old, the, like, the day before steak mixed with this beef. It was good. And so I got that, and then went back to work, and then I left and went and did a set at the Cellar, and I'm just like, I feel on top of the world. Like, I feel like the most valid boy.
Yeah, that's the best.
Like,
congratulations.
Comedy. No, and it evaporated just as quickly. Because, like, you know, you send your avails to the Cellar, like, it goes from, like, you get a bunch to, like, you get nothing. And you're like, oh, all right, cool. I'll just still come for free brunch.
It's still a feather in your cap, you know?
Yeah, man, to be able to be a dude from fucking Ohio and be able to, like, occupy that same space. Like, I've had to go up after Jeff Ross and Dave Attell bumping mics and fucking, like, been on, like, just been sitting at the table and fucking Judd Apatow and Chris Rock are sitting. I'm just like,
shit,
I'm going to move to that table over there if anyone else comes. Just because you're like, oh shit, like, I, as comfortable as I am, as many people as I know there, there's still those moments where you're like, damn.
Oh yeah.
You're kind of why I do this.
Yeah. And they're like, shut up, kid.
So you're just like, you're just around though. You're just like, this is cool.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing that we get to do, that we chose to do. And sometimes you get those nights where it's like, I did it right. You know, like, I mean, this has been a constant thing this year, but that I've asked people about, like, how do you feel about the decisions you've made in life that got you where?
I mean, I feel good about them because, like, what we just described, that, like, innocuous feeling you get at the Cellar, like, that's how I feel about all the festival weekends.
Yeah.
Where, like, 2015, like, I remember it was, like, you, Will Clark, Ted Alexandro, Baron Vaughn. Like, it was just, like, this dope cluster of people that came to this obscure city just because I'm too stubborn to move.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, that's why those festivals would happen. And that's cool that, like, you came through. You're like, I fuck with Cleveland. Cleveland's a cool ass
dude. Hey, man, look, man, I'm a simple guy, dude. I think it was Sunday. It was fucking football. It was opening weekend. I was in Lakewood. I went to that. It's not like Barcade, but it is.
It's got a bunch of video games. 16-bit.
I think so. I think that's what it was. And I hung out it's a deep dive in my Instagram, but you guys had this, it was like a used record store and it had like used CDs, all that stuff. And
the exchange.
Yes. I was like, I could fucking live here.
Yeah. It's very like, you can afford to have a life. You could have some space. You could it's weird, like, how your perspective changes, because, like, a few years ago, my dad was like, I think I'm going to buy the neighbor's house, because our neighbor had passed away and her house was in, like, probate for a while, whatever. Mm. And he bought it for, like, $17,000. Just like, I bought this house, and he took it out of his retirement. And I was like, well, the thing that gave this property value, which was, like, the schools and the steel mill, they're not coming back. Like, all the schools I went to were torn down. The steel mill's not going to reopen again. And he's like, you could always, properties, like, it's always good to have. And I'm like, yeah, looking at it, like, what he spent on that, I spent living in LA for 2 years renting and have nothing. Crazy. Like, I have nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But you don't think in those terms when you don't have perspective on them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So now that I'm like, oh, I might get this much money every month from this sound exchange shit. Mm-hmm. Can I buy property? Should I buy stocks? Should I pay my debt? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm thinking of all these things that I'm like, I wouldn't be thinking about if I didn't have that.
Right.
Sense of financial stability.
Yeah.
To build from.
Even aesthetically, just like, because it reminded me of, I mean, it's the Midwest. I mean, I loved living in Chicago. It just kind of like Lakewood was like really fucking chill. Yeah. And I love that. I love the, what's the place? Mayhall. Did they call it? It's Mayhall's, right?
Mayhall's. Yeah.
That chicken there was great. They still had like a drugstore there that you could fucking rent movies from.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was fucking, I loved it. I had a great time.
Yeah, man. But like that type of shit, like, I cherish that, like, creating that type of vibe.
Yeah.
People connected and felt like, man, I feel good. Like, I'm doing comedy and like I'm at this festival. Like, and this festival's cool. Like, that's a good thing to give to other people, to other artists, that feeling of like, oh, maybe it's not, maybe I shouldn't quit, or maybe I should, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
you need those along yes, the way.
You do.
To kind of like give you that sense of validity.
Yeah. Like that was one of those, like where it was like, I was just like, yeah, I needed, like, it was good to just kind of get away. Like, and then that was, it was crazy. Cause you think that was 2015. That's right before all the bullshit hit, you know, like all, it just got worse, yeah. You know, being a person of color, like, I'm not trying to be a person, but being a black or brown person, it was some bullshit. You're going to deal with some shit every day looking like we do. But yeah. Then, you know, 2016 hit and it was just like, it was just some more bullshit.
That's what the pandemic was, or this all the unrest was freeing in a way, because it's like this thing that is always an anxiety in the back of my mind, the yeah. looming danger of being brown in America,
mm-hmm.
Or non-white in America, or viewed right. as aggressive in America in a non-white body. Maybe that's even more proper way to phrase it.
But, yeah.
That anxiety finally, like, other people who aren't that get it,
mm-hmm.
and seeing the cognitive dissonance is disheartening. But like being like, all right, so it's not just me. It's not just yeah. always back here fucking yeah. draining me. All right, it's a real thing. Cool, 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 cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's been good.
Yeah, it's like you guys see it too now, huh? It's like a lot.
So that's what I mean by like mostly okay. Like as much as all these things press down, it's like it builds it up and releases it at the same time.
Yeah.
Cause it's yeah. like it becomes more of a shared experience.
Right. Right.
And makes people more comfortable talking about like, yeah, I should be able to be depressed within I should be able to acknowledge depression within my fucking brownness. You know yeah. what I mean?
Right.
Cause for so long, my mindset is like, no worries, whatever's clever, and try not to get too down because there's probably someone doing worse than you within a couple miles.
Yeah.
And that's a good mind frame to just keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a bad mind frame for acknowledging any type of sadness.
Yeah. It's so weird in our cultures where it's like you just don't fucking, like my parents are obviously from another generation. It's just like, why would you feel sad? It's like, no, you've got shit that you're not.
It's not even a concept that they can acknowledge.
Yeah. Why would you get nervous about going on stage? You're good. Why would you feel like, no, like, yeah, you like just won't admit. Like my mom is just like, just won't fucking admit any dings to the armor. You know, any type of like, it's just,
and that's a survival mechanism.
Yeah.
That's what your brain had to do to make all this shit okay.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, we're good.
To make okay. sure that I had what I needed to have when I was a kid. But it's like, fuck, man, you gotta be a human sometimes too. And when that shit, when that shit comes out, it's like, it's just a ball of like fucking fury. Whereas if you just like acknowledge stuff and just say like, whoa, okay, I'm feeling this type of way. Let me just kind of fall back a little bit, reassess. And I think like
why I feel this way, how yeah, why I'm
yeah. Cause that's hard. Yeah. It's and this COVID is forcing us to do that. And I think with us being comics, we're naturally gonna do that anyway, be introspective and kind of think about that stuff and all and
but now we don't have the release.
Yeah, we don't have the release, and that's
we're
that's
assembling the thing. all the marble, but we can't chisel it anywhere.
Yeah, you know? Or we just do it in different ways, like talking like we're doing now. But I think because I was talking to my parents about it one day, I was like, yeah, you know, and I bring it up a lot. It's just like you kind of feel like I feel like my life has meaning for me, and it's like. And the stuff that I've done, like it's called, like I could just look at my Instagram, you know, we curate that shit. But at the same time, yeah. It's like, I fucking had fun. I had fun. Yeah, like that shit was fun. You know, as much as we say, oh, we're performing on social media, we're doing this. No, that gig was fun. That festival was fun. Yeah,
it's cataloging your memories. Like I can go back, I can see my nephews and nieces at various points. Like, oh, yeah. I remember when I took them to eat pizza that time.
Yeah,
I remember when we stopped at the exchange and I was just like, get whatever game y'all want. I just got paid from the club. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember being able to do that from comedy.
Yeah, Yeah.
It'll make you feel great.
Dude, fucking like practical shit. Like the first time I bought tires from doing a weekend, I was like,
that's and major.
I told my dad, like, he was like, whoa, okay. You know, like, cause they didn't know, like,
yeah, I'm an adult.
Yeah. And then I was like, can you send me some money 2-3-6 months later? But it's still like those things are still beautiful. And I just feel like now it's like, it's kind of frivolous to do it in a pandemic right now. And I feel like I would want to come back when we can do it the right way and nobody, you know, gets sick or anything. And it's like,
yeah, we get to figure out the context with which we want to reengage.
That's fucking beautiful. That's perfect. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. That's perfect. Cause it's like, I don't want to be like, my shit can wait. As precious as it is for me, my shit can wait. It can wait.
Yeah. I was on Clubhouse, which is a whole
fiasco. Oh my God. Can we talk about that? Talk about that a little bit.
So it's an audio, it's like a drop-in audio. It's very similar to Zoom, except like if we were talking, other people would be able to have just hopped in and been in the crowd.
Yeah.
Or raised their hand to join the conversation.
Yeah.
But a lot of the conversations, it's something that exists all day, every day. So there's a lot of people in there not doing anything, talking about how things should be done. And then there's a lot of people giving, like, OG's giving OG advice, but in a reckless, like, there's this one dude who he's got mad respect in his scene. Like, he's just like that dude who put a lot of people on and he smashes in all environments. But he's like, y'all Zoom comedian. He's like, I do live shows. And we're all like, yeah, but like, we're not trying to die. We're not trying to kill them. He's like, I ain't no Zoom comedian. Y'all ain't real comedians. And it's like, that's the safest way to engage people right now is this technology.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so it's like, yeah, I mean, I could go do a live show if I really want to and be like, hey, beg all these clubs, like send them nonstop emails, like, hey, I see you're open. Like, I'm a few hours away. Like, I come, like, and get to go do a gig just to be like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm out here. Like, I'll just sit at the crib.
Yeah.
And like, you know, fortunately from doing that shit with my album, I took myself off unemployment. I'm like, boom, I'll just trust that I'm making enough money to not need you no more.
Yeah. And we don't know what's... Oh, go ahead. Keep going.
Once the stimulus bonus evaporated and it was like 100, I was getting like 170 bucks a week. I'm like, I could make that with comedy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's very easy. That's very attainable in... if I can go perform and do shit, and then being able to take a break from that, being trapped in that mindset and being like, oh, if I chop up an album and like stream it passively, it makes me this much money. If I get a track on Sirius, it could potentially make this much money. Mm-hmm. If I then I own it to then license it, like, you know, seeing all the different, like, I've observed that I have no money generated from Tidal. That means no one's listened to me on Tidal. So I subscribe to Tidal, which is like $11 a month, because I saw that they pay out the most, like 1,000 streams is $11, where with the other apps it's like $3-4.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right, so I just, maybe this $11 will be worth 44 a week.
Yeah,
you know, so I'm doing different shit like that, and like I've just try to continue adapting. Once it gets warm, I'll do outdoor shows again, and like, you know, maybe we'll have the vaccine by then and I'll be able to have those be more like community oriented versus like trying to commodify the artistic side of it. Like, it's such an interesting to try to remove capitalism from the equation.
Yeah.
But while still paying people, and like building equity in yourself is like the new trying to figure it out. When you're not around, like, you know, Hollywood, they've been filming shit the whole time.
You know,
they just set up different shit. New York's had this small bubble of like rooftop outdoor shows, and then it got cold.
Yeah.
And then like, I don't know. I think they're doing some production shit out there.
Yeah, they're doing, like, I've auditioned for some stuff. came, got called back to a couple of things. And I think I got a call back to, they got rid of the role. I'll tell you when we wrap it, we're going to wrap it up in a bit. But one was like, oh, you got a call back. And then they were like, oh, we got rid of it. We got rid of that role. We're just not doing the role anymore.
Yeah. And you're like, God damn.
So, you know, some industrials and stuff, but like, yeah, I would be grateful to get something. And I think SAG would make it safe and they'd be following the guidelines. So I wouldn't be too worried. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, Ramon, man, this has been fucking great, dude. So great to, I guilted you into, coming on the podcast.
Oh, no, it's just one of those, like, I'd be forgetting shit. I'm like, oh, yeah. And then, like, a lot of times, like, you just forget to hit each other back up to follow up.
No, it's all good.
I was like, oh, yeah, I just be at the crib not doing shit. I, like, roll a few times a day. I get real high, and then I just try to, like, not eat as much.
Yeah, because I was just like, let me get... He's like, nobody's talking to me anymore. I was like, motherfucker.
No, it's beautiful.
Yeah. You like it. You like that nobody's...
In the sense of there be so much... forced or projected camaraderie for access.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
That like once there was nothing to access, it's like, well, how many of y'all still
really fuck with me?
Really fuck with me. And it's like none of if I didn't text most people, I wouldn't hear from them. And that's how most of us are. But that's what the pandemic has done, is been like, well, who do I want to talk to? Who do I want to hear from? And who feels that same way about me?
Right.
And it's nice when you realize like, oh, okay, you know, it's not like you're not a friend, but it's like, here's the circle of trust and you're just like out here.
Yeah.
Just fine. There's nothing wrong with being out here, but you're just not in here.
Right.
Where I thought you was. You know what I'm saying? But you don't got space for everybody in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. That's another one of those survival things. Like maybe there is room for everybody in here. Maybe in here should be all this.
Well, it's always just like mutual respect, man, that I've always had for you, man. And I always
appreciate you, man.
Check for you and shit. And hopefully, God willing, we'll get to rock out in some form or fashion.
Yeah, man. Check that email I sent you last year. And do the thing. It takes a little bit, but, you know, it's one of those things you could do right now that'll get you some money in summer in perpetuity. It'll get you some forever money, hopefully. If it does, if it goes right, you might get them. They might be like, nah, none of them.
Yeah.
But the advice I give is make your tracks as short and clean as possible. So as many stations accept them. And then it's like they took six of my tracks. Two of them are like longer, like 3-4 minute bits, and those have made me know they have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But the short, like one of the absolute shortest bit made me almost $200.
Wow. I think my whole joint is like 24 minutes.
My two projects together are 28 minutes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to look into it because I need to get that going. Well, plug your albums, man. Plug them.
You can listen to them on whatever platform you desire. It's a Ramon Rivas Revisited is the first album. It's like pre-mustache comedy. And then Stick to Comedy is the second album. It's just a bunch of political stuff and like stuff that I did on like tapings in like 2015, 2016. But like that still spoke to like the moment where people were telling me to shut up. In 2020, I've been talking about this.
you're one of the few comics that quote James Baldwin in your act.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. I'm trying to make. So I've had white people come up to me like, I've never thought about race like that before, and I'm like, all right, that's cool.
Before it was cool to quote James Baldwin.
I'm out here.
Yeah, man.
Reading and trying to process it.
Dude, well, thank you so much, man. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.